Hello, I'm Beth Kesselman, and this is Smashing the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring and a St. Stephen's Community House production. Thanks for joining us. St. Stephen's Community House acknowledges that our locations are situated upon traditional territories of the Wendat, Anishinaabeg Nation, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations, and the Métis Nation. The treaty that was signed for this particular parcel of land is collectively referred to as the Toronto Purchase and applies to lands east of Brown's Line to Woodbine Avenue and north towards Newmarket. St. Stephen's Community House is a guest, and we recognize the enduring presence of the Indigenous peoples on this land. Thanks for joining us again for episode 2.5 of Smash the Ceiling, Social Hiring. I want to start off by saying that you can engage, so please feel free to tweet at PeerPathwaysTO or Instagram also at PeerPathwaysTO. We'd love to hear from you. Today we're going to continue from our conversation from last week, where we discussed both Bill 148 and the minimum wage. So today we're going to start with a conversation with Ina Labuschagne from 15 in Fairness. And after that, we're going to follow up with a conversation with Zara Denani and Mariko Nguyen from Old School General Store. And they're a small business that does a lot of social hiring. And I sort of cut a really awesome little tidbit out of the conversation with Zara and Mariko. So at the very end of this episode, there's a little tidbit about how Old School got its name, and it's really great. So I highly encourage you to listen all the way to the end so you can hear that. So just a couple more things. During Ina and I's conversation, Ina lists several studies, but I think we neglect to tell you where you can find them. So I'm going to remedy that right now. All the information can be found at 15and, that's A-N-D, fairness.org/the-facts. Because if you want to delve into this a little deeper, I would highly recommend you start there. It's a great website to begin with, but it has lots of great material and wonderful information that can really help you go deeper into the issue and have a greater understanding of the matter at hand. So I would highly recommend you go there. There's just a couple other things. So one, during conversation with Ina, we might have an echo in the room, and that's because we were recording in a church, which is kind of cool, but left us with a little bit of an echo. And then the other thing is that we try to have a lot of fun here on Smash the Ceiling, and while I tend to edit out a lot of the fun bits and the giggles and stuff for professionalism's sake, sometimes it can be good to leave it in once in a while, and that can be heard in both of the interviews. So we got to let loose a little bit once in a while and live a little. So without further ado, this is Ina Labuschagne from 15 in Fairness.
It's just so important. My dad, I don't understand what happened, because my dad was always like, he had businesses and he's like, your employees are the feet of your company. You have to treat them well so you can walk, right? And like, I grew up with that principle of businesses treating their employees well. And I don't know what happened, but like, we've forgotten that principle, and we've gone to this principle where it's just based on the businesses making all as much money as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And I mean, that just really kind of actually flabbergasted me, you know, like what happened? So that's why it's so important, is because it's important to treat people well. And especially in our rich country, where I feel like other poor nations look to us like, what are we doing, you know? And it's embarrassing, you know, like, we should be treating our employees well, because that, you know, responds to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like Canada is the leader in the world, like, that we, you know, have a voice out there, and how we treat people is, it resounds. And if people look to us and see that we pay people not a wage that they can make a living at, that people who are working hard can't even have to work 2-3 jobs just to pay the rent and, you know, food. That's sad. That's very sad. And that says, you know, mountains to me, what, you know, what we stand for.
Absolutely. So why is this campaign like heated up so much? Because I see it everywhere now. Like, I was out at a festival and I'm seeing, you know, tables everywhere right. I go, because there are buttons.
Like, because it's so important. It's so important to let people know that it's not, it's okay to ask for a minimum wage that puts you above the poverty line, mm-hmm. that it's okay to ask for paid emergency leave or non-paid emergency leave, because as the the laws stand right now, if you're in a company that's under, I believe it's 99 employees, you have no rights to emergency leave. So you can't even take one day off, non-paid, for because you're sick or because your kid's sick, and a business could legally fire you with that loophole. Mm. Like in a company larger, you have to be given 10 paid or 10 non-paid emergency days. So, I mean, that's, it's like really important to fight for fair, you know, laws that protect everyone, not just some people.
You're talking about 148.
Yes, I'm talking about Bill 148. And the Ontario government introduced Bill 148, the Fair Workplaces, Better Jobs Act. And that is really important because it does take out that major loophole where it closes that, which 1.7 million workers will benefit from that loophole being closed. So now everyone will be afforded the right to stay home if their child is sick, or if they have a family emergency, or if they're sick, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
What components of the bill do you want to bring the most attention to?
Well, I would like to bring attention to the fact that although the bill does say same wage for same job, mm-hmm. okay, it includes the structure of the wording is so ambiguous that it creates a huge loophole. Okay, and what we would like to do is close that loophole, make the wording more, stronger, so that it actually does what it says it's going to do.
So how would that, what can people do to help affect change for that?
What they could do is they could write a letter to the editor, or they could call radio show, talk shows, or they could call their MPP or write a letter to their MPP and just let them know that they want that loophole closed. Or we just need awareness of this bill because it hasn't passed yet.
No.
So this bill could possibly fall dead on the floor if it's not passed by before they go on vacation. The bill right now asks for 2 paid of those emergency days. So it's kind of like 2 paid sick days. Okay, but they're asking for 5, which isn't the total of 7 that we were requesting, but they are bringing an amendment for 5. And they're also bringing an amendment so that you get the 3 paid, the three weeks vacation after 1 year instead of 5 years. And they're bringing, I think they're tightening the, tightening that loophole. They're not closing it completely, but right now there's a huge wide, like a Mack truck could drive through. So like it sounds great, you know, but it's not going to be effective. And so that's like unfortunately how most politician stuff works.
My understanding is that there is a certain amount, at least when you read Twitter, I mean, from the premier and other politicians, there is some support for this that's ongoing.
Well, the Liberal government brought this.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's support from there, but now we're getting supported by the non-majority party, mm-hmm. which is it's really good because, you know, they are taking a stand towards this, and that's like really good, really, really good.
So what resistance are you seeing now in the fight for 15 and in the fight for 148?
Okay, well, the myths are the big business and the Chamber of Commerce, which are supposed to speak on the behalf of the small businesses, but they don't. They're really in the pockets of the large business corporations, like places that pay, you know, are more likely, 70% more likely to pay minimum wage than a small business. Mm-hmm. Because right now there's a... And I mean, what's sad is that they're voicing their, you know, fight on outdated polls and outdated, like from 1939 polls, where they've never been able to make what those polls said, like they've never been able to how do they say that? Like very few recent studies from Canada that have use these new economic methods finding job loss effects. There's, okay, big business is saying that, you know, this will cause great job loss and price rising, okay? Mm-hmm. But it says this is a fear-mongering that is out of line with the latest economic research. Using improved techniques that carefully isolate the effects of minimum wage increases from the remaining noise in economic data, the weight of evidence from the United States points to job loss effects that are statistically indistinguishable from zero. So even though, you know, that, and that's what the big business say, oh, the prices are going to rise, or, oh, jobs are going to lose, you know, that's not, it's not true. It's based on false evidence, if it's based on evidence at all. And what we want to say is, why is it okay for you to have such big profit margins when really the cost of wages in a business is less than 10%? So you saying that, I mean, what makes weight or what makes the cost of an item is more the cost of its products, you know, like how much, what makes our wages or prices rise in our economy is how much the dollar, the value of the dollar, what was the oil prices, what was there a shortage of something that was made in making that product.
So there's a lot of other mitigating factors.
Yeah, and it's that. Not the cost of wages.
So, they're just a teensy
yes,
width.
Yes, such a small minute, part. Yes. Yeah. So like we're saying, you know, it's not okay to treat your employees poorly. We need to stand as a country and say, we do not support this. And personally, you know, I don't believe that stockholders necessarily correlate that the stocks that they are holding mm-hmm. are companies that are treating their employees so terribly. I believe that they have, you know, it's bought like for them. They don't like necessarily know that they're holding those stocks. And we need to raise awareness. They need to start becoming green in their stock. You know, they need to look at what companies they are holding. And if it is a company like these big conglomerations, there's a lot. Somebody I know that's worked at, hold on. It's a big company. Starts with an S. This is a burger place, and that's owned by a big conglomeration. Mm-hmm. And he's worked there for 16 years and makes minimum wage. 16 years minimum wage. The only wage increases he's gotten is since the 14 and Now campaign where we index the minimum wage every year for inflation. That's what he's gotten. Yeah. And he's told that's a raise increase. Like he's told that's a minimum, but it's not. It's actually
it's a cost of living.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's prorated with inflation. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. So that just infuriates me that such a large place could do that. And he's scared. He's scared to have the minimum wage raise. He fears losing his job because that's what they tell him.
I think that's common though, because with the big organizations and the large conglomerations all yelling that we're going to have to let employees go, I think it's really fair. Fair emotion for the employees
exactly.
to have some fear because
Absolutely.
They're being told by their employers that they're being reminded of how precarious their work really is.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's very true fact. And I'm not saying that, yes, the fear is real because they are being told this by the people that they should be able to trust, right?
Right.
Their employers. But the fact of the matter remains that it's not true.
What are the top four things that you want people to know at the end of our chat today?
The top four things are that raising the minimum wage is actually going to be good for our economy. That it's going to, because when you raise the minimum wage and put money in the pockets of workers, they spend it in the economy, and the economy needs money and it needs customers to grow. So raising the minimum wage is going to be good for the economy. That's one thing. That prices are not going to rise because the wage is such a small percentage of prices that, you know, what big businesses are doing, the backlash of big businesses, are they're telling people prices are going to go through the roof. The sky is going to fall. What I want people to know is that we're not asking for the world. We are asking for a wage that is fair. We want laws that are fair for everybody, and that's not something that they should be scared of. That it's okay to want what is just, you know, what is just right. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that it's going to make Canada a better place, or it's going to make Ontario a better place. And that's, it's a nationwide, it's actually a worldwide movement right now to treat workers fairly. I mean, this is in countries all around the world. They're fighting, they're doing, quiet protests, peaceful protests. In South Korea, for the Women's Day, there was like a million people at the same time peacefully protesting. And I think this is something they do like either every Saturday or every month, that a million workers fight to have their jobs be better, you know, be more secure, not be precarious, and to have their wages go up.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yes. And so it's a worldwide thing. And the fourth one is...
get involved.
Yes, get involved. Get involved. Yeah, get involved. Call your MPP. Come to a meeting. Go on our website, www.15andfairness.org. Twitter, tweet, whatever you want to do. Follow us on that. Get involved and come to a meeting and come be part of it, because it's a really awesome, awesome organization.
So thank you, Ina, for joining us, and really appreciate your time and bringing such attention to this really important cause.
It is important, and it's actually history is in the making right now, because it's like, it's the biggest jump in, I think, Canadian history for a minimum wage, and it's like so exciting. We're really excited. But it's just a part of it. Bill 148, which hasn't been passed yet, is the other part, the fairness part, and that's a major part of our campaign also.
Fabulous. Great. Well, thanks again.
Awesome.
And I'm going to...
Woo, 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 woo.
Okay, that's going in. So once again, that was Ina LaBouchaine from 15 and Fairness, and a huge thanks to her and a huge thanks to 15 and Fairness for having that great conversation. And I look forward to hearing about all the progress that's made on this matter and Bill 148 in the months to come. Next, we have a conversation with Zara and Mariko from Old School General Store. And in full transparency, I've worked in employment services for a few years in employment services and job development. And I met Mariko and Zara through job developing. And job developing is when someone does outreach on the behalf of someone looking for work to try and assist them with finding employment. And so Zara and Mariko make reference to our relationship. And so that's how we met. And it was really great working with them, and I look forward to working with them again in the future. So this is something Zara makes reference to during our conversation. The other thing I wanted to mention before we listen in is we were in their store. So it is a community space, and you might hear things like a baby crying or the lottery dinging or people ordering coffee or ordering ice cream, and that's the way their store is. It's a great community space. There are lots of people there, and I think it's a great representation of both their business and the community mindset that they have. So thanks so much for listening in again, and hope you enjoy our conversation as much as we did.
Well, I think that I come from a not-for-profit background, mm-hmm. and I've worked in not-for-profit organizations for most of my career. What we're trying to do here is fund our own community building and our own community work that we want to do. Because what I've learned over the years is it's very hard to always have to answer to people who are giving you money for the work you want to do. So we're trying an experiment here, which will be to make this retail business, a for-profit business, sustainable, and then be able to one day use income from this for-profit to do the community work we want to do. But you know, we're already doing a lot of the community building through the relationships we're building, the community events we do, the causes we support, the initiatives we start here in the neighborhood and the community. So it's a for-profit based on a not-for-profit philosophy.
Excellent. And what initiatives do you have going on right now?
We are co-founders of a group, a community group called EastEnders Against Racism, where we have these signs going across the East End that are very bright, very colorful, and they make a very large statement which says, "United Against Hate" on one side and "Everyone Belongs" on the other side. I mean, now more than ever, do we need people to really speak up and voice their opposition to hatred and prejudice. So that's one of the kinds of community initiatives we're doing right now.
So one of the so when we first met, it was about social hiring and hiring, people in the community who may not have been on the top of your list or may have not been on your radar for hiring initially. And so my question to you is, why do you socially hire?
You know, I heard this saying a long time ago, and it just taught me so much. And it was a one sentence saying, and it says, it's not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the most nurtured. And so people who grow up with, you know, two parents in a middle-class household who have access to education, access to people who have jobs in, you know, middle-class or upper-class situations, those people have, you know, so much advantage. Mm-hmm. And those people end up getting jobs. You know, they know how to go. Their parents have taught them, go, this is what you do with a resume. This is how you make one. This is how you hand it in. This yep. is who you... Or let me talk to a friend of mine and he'll get you a job. You know, people who have those kinds of advantages can get a job anywhere. So one of the things Mariko and I thought is because... we come from, marginalization and have had our own barriers. We understand how hard it is to get gainful employment. And so we didn't want to just hire people with access and privilege already. We wanted to support people who only employers who have a social analysis or an analysis around disadvantage would actually kind of do the kind of hiring that people with disadvantage need.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Because there's barriers, and people with disadvantage aren't, you know, cleaned up in the way that some people expect, and people make a lot of assumptions based on first impressions, and people make a lot of assumptions based on everything from race and class and sexual orientation, gender identification, to how someone dresses.
Yeah.
So hopefully we challenge that in ourselves on a daily basis enough to want to look beyond that.
And I find that for me, like, one of the key, like, moments of where disadvantage is seen is in the resume, because it's not, oftentimes it's just not as fleshed out as many others. You know, you'll see a lack of education, or it will be poorly organized, or it won't have, it'll have short-term positions on it, where I think a lot of people get ruled out of many traditional employment opportunities, even if that person is a really excellent employee, will be an excellent employee. It just doesn't come through right away just because of life circumstances, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, you can only get so much from a resume. Even if they are really educated, and very educated and or have a lot of experience, it's like you just said, it doesn't portray that if a person is hardworking, is dedicated, is willing to try their best and, you know, work with you.
So what have you found to be, if resume isn't a good representation, what have you found to be good key indicators for positive employment experiences?
I think you really just have to give them a chance, give them a trial, or else how can you know? It's like dating. Right? What do you, like, you can't just say no to everybody just because, I don't know, you didn't like their hair at that one moment, you know.
I'm not going to reflect on my teenage years right now.
On one of our first dates, Mariko and I had a lipstick on that to this day she harasses me about. Yes, and to her credit, she still came on the next date. She didn't stand me up because of the lipstick. Yeah.
Love.
Awesome. And if she had, she would have lost out on the best thing that ever happened to her, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, but social hiring has its ups. Any sort of hiring has its ups and its downs, right? You're going to have some good experiences, and you're going to have some bad experiences. So how have you found it so far? Because you've been doing this for a little while now. And what have you found... what have you found so far? Is it mostly positive? Why do you keep coming back? Have you had bad experiences?
So we've had, I wouldn't say good or bad experiences, just because we've learned from them. And everybody who's come through, we've actually really liked, and they were good people. And we built an emotional connection with them. It just so worked out that the job wasn't the right fit. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the challenge. Like, when you have a really serious developmental disability, mm-hmm. it's hard sometimes to do the things that other people do who don't have that same challenge.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it's like, how do we find the right job for that person to do? And I think that becomes the task. Is there a job within your organization that can be tweaked for a person? And we've tried in different situations, and sometimes it's really worked. You know, there's a real accommodations we've made for someone who's staying with us now. And then there's people who regardless of how many different angles we tried to fit them, this wasn't the right fit. But that doesn't mean that they're not employable. That means our place wasn't the right fit for them. But, you know, I know with St. Stephen's help, that person will find something that actually meets with what their abilities are, because everybody has an ability. We just have to find the fit for that ability. And I think it's also important to challenge our own kind of ableist assumptions all the time, you know, assumptions around speed and perfection, and we're constantly checking ourselves on that. So I think that it's about accommodating the person by really looking for options.
Excellent. And so why do you keep coming back? You had some things that didn't work out, but you still came back. What was the motivating factor?
We're committed. We're really committed to hiring people with different abilities, because, why not? Right. Why not? Not to mention, like, there's some amazing people we've met through your program. We wholeheartedly believe in St. Stephen's and the work you do. Yeah, there's too many reasons to do this. So let me answer this from the perspective of someone who doesn't have a social equity perspective.
Okay.
just a regular business person who wants to do quality business and make a profit. The reason to work with your organization is because sometimes people who have had challenges and barriers work harder. Sometimes people who have had challenges and barriers have had to use their creativity and imagination in so many different ways to survive. So they have a whole other realm of thinking to bring to the table. You know, sometimes people with these challenges are really like grateful, and they're just grateful to have a job. Whereas, you know, sometimes people who come into the workforce, especially at, you know, entry level, they're not so grateful, and they're like, oh, I have to do this job, and there's attitude issues. So, you know, there are amazing things that are brought to the table by people who have barriers otherwise.
Excellent. Thank you. What's some advice you would give to an organization who wants to start social hiring and is thinking about it but hasn't done it yet?
To organizations out there that haven't started social hiring yet, I would say that, you should look at the Human Rights Code and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. I mean, I think that we have a founding law of the land, you know, our charter, that talks about treating all people equally and treating all people with respect and dignity. And so to not close off this opportunity because of fear or other preconceived notions. So the first thing that I really strongly believe in is that we all have a social responsibility. We all have a legal responsibility. Like, this is our law, right? Then I would say that you do need to have some things in place, like people who understand that they might have to train a little more patiently, that you might need to be thoughtful in how you explain things, because people learn differently. But I would say just jump in and learn. Just do it. There's nothing bad that's going to happen.
I think most employers are hesitant to begin with because it is, at the beginning at least, it is more time, right? That's the assumption, right? It's going to take up a lot of your time, therefore it'll cost you money. You don't have the patience for it. They're not getting it as quickly, or they're not understanding you. But it's really, it's just like Zara just said, it's really about, you know, explaining and looking at things in a different way so that they can understand it. They can understand something the way that you do as well, but it's explained in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's sure, at the very beginning might be a little bit of a challenge, but that can happen with someone who comes from a typical background as well. And so I don't think you should really discriminate just because you know that they have challenges in their lives.
The other thing I would add is that St. Stephen's, if the person's coming through St. Stephen's, you can get all kinds of support. Like, I remember that one person we worked with, and there was an occupational therapist who worked with them in the store, mm-hmm. you know, and
that was a good partnership.
That was a great partnership. That was an amazing partnership. And, you know, everyone learned something in that process. There's lots of times where you and I have met with one of the people and just had some, you know, important conversations mm-hmm. around learning. And growth and you know, the workplace. So one of the best things and most important things to rely on is the St. Stephen's support.
Thank you. I'm glad that you found that useful.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you saw this from our work with everyone, is that we really do care about the person.
Like, yes.
You want the person to have a good experience. You want the person to learn. You want the person to grow. You want the person coming out of their work with you with more assets, more skills, a good experience, you know, something to springboard off of. So it's, and it, and then that becomes a fulfilling thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, you're contributing to someone's life. It's not just, you're not just an employer.
Yeah. You become part of their, part of one of the pieces of their lives. Yeah, for sure. So I guess my final question is, do you guys have anything that you wanted to add or say about your business or anything before? And then, of course, like, all the contact information and the Instagram and all that good stuff, because I know you guys are big Instagrammers.
So the Old School General Store is one of the coolest places you'll go to in the city. And while you're here, you can have a coffee, a latte, a tea, because we have our own cafe bar. We have our own ice cream bar. We have the most delicious groceries. We have, okay, I'll stop. Well, it's a neat place to visit, and you can, you know, yeah, have a baked treat while doing the gift shopping you need to do, and then pick up some really yummy groceries. So it's a
all local artists, right?
Yeah, we try very hard to work with local hand making workers who put their hearts and souls into making yummy things or artistic things, and so we've got a lot of local representation in the store. And if you want to find us, we are on Facebook, and it's Old S Cool, so Old's Cool General Store, or that's the same handle for Instagram, and Twitter is Old Cool, and then you can email us at oldschoolgeneralstore@gmail.com, and you can call us at 416-425-9084. And if you're still lacking for a way to connect with us, you can send us beautiful love vibes telepathically. And then finally, you can just go to our website, www.oldschoolgeneralstore.com, brought to you by a local amazing organization near you, St. Stephen's House.
So that wraps up episode 2.5 of Smash the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring. A huge thanks to all of our guests and a huge thanks to you, our listeners. We really appreciate your time. Next time on Smash the Ceiling, on episode 3, we're going to be having a conversation about, if you'd like to start social hiring but haven't incorporated any social hiring practices into your business plan yet, how you can go about doing that. If you want some help with it, how can you reach out? What can we do? And that's sort of where we're going to go next. And so I hope you'll join us for that at the end of the month. And feel free, again, another plug for Twitter and Instagram, to tweet at us at PeerPathwaysTO or Instagram at PeerPathwaysTO. Have a great day.
When we decided that we were going to open our own general store, we were thinking of different kinds of names. And, you know, the creative kind of imaginative, more playful and identity-based stuff is my department. And so, you know, every day I was contemplating, meditating, coming up with different things. You know, and so I would come home and I'd be like, oh, what about this? And she'd be like, no. Like, for example, I swear I had the name. I went for this long walk by the water and it just came to me. It was a moment of inspiration. And And I came home and I'm like, I've got it. And she's like, okay. And then, so, you know, both Mariko and I are people of color. And the short-term POC, POC, is often used to refer to people of color. Well, by people of color. And there's two of us. So I said, why don't we call it Two Pocs Corner? Tupac, get it? Tupac.
Anyways,
so, because I'm a huge fan of Tupac Shakur.
Okay.
So Tupac's Corner. And then she's like, no. And then I thought, okay, well, what about Two Asian Chicks? Because it is a bit of a stereotype that, you know, a South Asian person running a corner store or a Asian person running a convenience store.
Yep.
So,
frankly, that hadn't occurred to me, but okay.
So I thought, like, but she's like, nobody's going to get your sense of humor in the title. Like, it's just don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to, like, have a protest outside the store. So, it took me a while, and I'm thinking, okay, we want it to harken back to those days where people would use their general store as the hub of activity. They would use that space to congregate, have the daily news of what's happening with the neighbors. They would use that space to, of course, get their rations and their goods. But it was also cornerstone to relationships in the community, and that's the foundation of what we want to do, is build relationships with our neighbors that are, you know, founded on a lot of trust and integrity and good things, and that are sustainable over the long term. So then I'm like, okay, so it's like an old school general store.
Yeah.
And so that just came out of my mouth one day, and then I was like, oh yeah, but the words old school are used so often, like that's overused terminology in some ways. And then I started thinking about, well, the different iterations of that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, old is cool. And then old's cool came too. But the other part of that is that it's actually been used by people in the past, like rappers in Brooklyn who used to sample beats. Jazz beats and R&B beats, they would say in their lyrics, old is cool, and then in the speed of their rhythm, they would, like, it would go from old is cool to old's cool to old school, and that's where the old school terminology actually comes from. So, you know, I like knowing the meaning of things, and meaning is, you know, laced into everything I try and do. So there you go. That's why we're the old cool general store.
Do I have to edit all that out? Some of it's really awesome.
You can keep it all.
We're great.
Yeah.
We're keeping that.
Okay.
St. Stephen's Community House would like to thank United Way, as well as the Ministry of Advanced Education and Skills Development and Employment Ontario, for their continued support with this project. We would also like to acknowledge Monk Turner for allowing us to use Judicious Jude for our music, as well as Satunium for the percussive loop.